Ask the Podcast Coach for August 2nd, 2014.
Let's get ready to podcast.
Oh, it's Saturday morning, and you've got podcast questions, and we've got podcast answers. Welcome to Ask the Podcast Coach. I'm your host, Dave Jackson, from the School of Podcasting, and this is where we do answer any little podcasting question you have on your mind. You can call in 845-262-2401, and joining me right over there, the one, the only, don't be fooled by cheap imitations, and that would be Jim Collison, who is joining us from Atlantis today.
I'm swimming underwater this morning, trying to podcast from somewhere underwater, apparently.
Yeah, he's we don't know what the deal is. We had some minor issues today with audio, and we don't know what's going on.
And no, we're just gonna punt. Sometimes you just gotta punt and do the podcast.
Yeah, and Google's free, so we've decided that we're not going to pay them anymore for their service, because we kind of aren't doing that anyway. But that's the fun part of free. You don't really have a whole lot of. It's not like we can go complain to tech support and plus by tomorrow, we could probably disconnect and reconnect a couple times and eventually it would be fine. But
I'd be late for the show and get all flustered. But at some point, you just got to get through it.
That's it. You just you go through. But hello to the chat room. Of course, you can find us at askthepodcastcoach.com/live, and that's where we're at every Saturday at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time. And as I go over to check, yes, right now we have open phone lines. That's right. That number is 845-262-2401. That is 845-262-2401. Open lines now, which means you call, I click a button, and you are out going over the internet to the world.
To the webs.
Yes. So I did get a good question from a friend of mine named Tina, who you can find over at homeschoolrealm.com. She has about 50 different websites. And she says, hey, Dave, we're up to 46 episodes now, and the audio files are starting to pile up. According to Windows, I have over 50 gigs of past episodes. I'm in the process of getting all my files on the cloud, using various things like Box.net, Dropbox, OneDrive, blah, blah, blah. But none of them will allow this much storage without paying. And I know this is going to just continue to pile up. Yet, I don't want to delete them. Yeah, don't delete them. I want to go, in case I want to go back and repackage them or make a best of show and things like that. And so basically she asked, what do I do with my files? And my files are all in my hard drive. And they're also, I believe they're in Dropbox I'm using for backup. And the thing that is amazing, now I realize it sounds like she's trying to do this for free, and I'm not sure there's a, you could probably get a USB drive that might be able to you could use, but that again is not free. OneDrive is a, I think of the different cloud storages, I think they give you the most, that's Microsoft's tool. But the thing to keep in mind, I looked this morning, you can get a terabyte hard drive for $79. You can get a 3 terabyte hard drive for $150. And I realize that is far from free, but that is humongoid. That is giant. Because I have to buy one. I've been doing video. And if you want to fill up a hard drive, hey, just start doing video. That'll knock that out real, real quick. And so, Jim, do you know of any free storage?
Do kinda. I know free storage, Dave? So do I? You're asking the storage guy. This when you put this in the show notes this morning, it was in my sweet spot. I was just like, oh man, we are talking storage. This is awesome. You know, you mentioned 1 terabyte external. You can get a 6 terabyte internal now, $299. So, wow. You know that the storage prices are dropping. One thing with 50 gig local, that shouldn't be. I mean, 50 gig on a hard drive is nothing. So I'm not so sure what Tina's concerned about with her local storage. I know she's trying to back it up to the cloud, and that you know, that's a lot different in that sense. Most of, even with the free services, 50 gig right now is about the limit if you're going to go absolutely free. But we did an interview on Thursday night over on my show, Home Gadget Geeks, and there's a race right now going on with storage. And so we had a company called MediaFire. You can use MediaFire.com, and interviewed their CEO. And they've gone all the way to the bottom with 1 terabyte of cloud storage for $24 a year.
Whoa.
And I was like, how do you do that? Okay. That most of my questions on the show, we haven't produced that program yet. So if you're listening live, it'll be coming out on Monday if you want to go over to theaverageguy.tv and listen to it. But Derek, the CEO, you know, they control all their own storage. They don't use Amazon. A lot of these cloud storage places use Amazon and such to kind of augment their storage, and they got to pay for it. These guys have built an infrastructure. They own all their equipment. It's well run. It's efficient. Because that was the question. How do you do that, Dave? You always say that all the time. You don't want to go with some free service because you know what? You got to pay the bills, right? And
right.
Advertising model on storage is kind of weird and all those things. So anyways, $24 a year, 1 terabyte of data, and a couple interesting things with it. One is they give you direct access to your link. So it's like using a Libsyn or a Blueberry or whatever where you get your file name.mp3 in a web form. You can link your files to these guys. The one caveat is they only give you 10 terabytes of bandwidth. Okay, I'm joking. Only 10 terabytes of bandwidth? Most of us podcasters are not even going to use, and that's a month, right? We're not going to use 10 terabytes of bandwidth for our files coming down. If we are, you're in a different league of podcasting from that standpoint.
Yeah, that's...
So it's an amazing... I'm looking at it. I'd love to say I'd recommend it, but I haven't dug in enough. I haven't used it long enough. I don't want to be one of these podcasters who tries it for a day and then says, oh, I recommend, you know... One of the big drawbacks, no stats. So this isn't a Libsyn where you're going to put your stuff on there and you're going to get these awesome download stats. You're going to have to use like a Blueberry or whatever to track your feed. But you could store them out there. Don't have to do anything with it. You could, and that's just great backup. You could also make it a CDN, a place to actually store your media files. And again, I've got some work to do on this, but it was an interesting. An interesting discussion with those guys around it. And so we'll talk, Dave, I want to talk a little bit more about backup because I think this is an area that people don't really understand very well.
Yeah, and Daniel J. Lewis, the one, the only from the Audacity to Podcast is in the chat room. He says, I'm using Amazon Glacier at 1 cent per gig per month.
Yeah, that's... very, very cold storage. If you're going to be backing it up, that's a great way to do it as well if you want to do it. If you want to do it that way.
Yeah, the thing to keep in mind with a backup, if we just go to backup kind of 101, it's not a backup until it's in a separate location from your original file. I actually have people that go, yeah, I have it on my hard drive, and then I have they'll get another internal hard drive, and they'll back it up on that. I'm like, okay, technically that's a backup, but if your computer catches on fire, you've now lost two copies of it. And so I always say, get it someplace, not that way. If your house blows up, you still got everything you need. And
And let's look at 50 gig isn't very much. I have 300 gig of data of my podcast file. So in Daniel's model, a gig a month, that's $3 a month times it's actually more expensive to use Glacier than it would be to use for me than to use this MediaFire, at least in those options. I think we're going to see a lot of these companies, it's a race to the bottom right now. And so I think we're going to see, Google Drive has already opened up there. I mean, for I forget the pricing. I've got a cloud storage guide on my site that's got all the pricing and where everybody's at today with that. I got kind of a spreadsheet that lays it out. But I think we're going to see Microsoft and Amazon and Google all drop to 1 terabyte. 1 terabyte right now seems to be the unlimited amount, right? It's going to be really hard for you to fill up 1 terabyte of data in the cloud. You're just going to have to really work at it. I've got some guys that listen to me that laugh at 1 terabyte. Oh, I got 4 terabytes. Well,
yeah,
that's the 1%.
All right. Daniel has mentioned that I was in voice mode, so I've switched to studio mode. So you guys will have to let me know if I sound too.
Oh, there you go. Now you're sounding sexy.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Very good. So it's, the audio pieces are pretty small. You know, if you're only an audio podcaster and you're doing 50 to 100 meg files, those won't stack up as fast.
No.
Your video ones, I just was doing some video work this weekend, and, you know, those get in the gigs. So that's where it starts. If you're a video podcaster, that's where it starts stacking up pretty fast. And so even I keep all my audio, I keep all my video, and I'm still under 500 gig of total storage with what I'm doing. And I keep a lot. So a terabyte is still a lot of space. David, it looks like we have a caller.
We do. Ending in 1525. Thanks for calling in. What's your name and number? That's a whole nother podcast. What's your name? What's your website? And what's your question?
Hey, Dave and Jim, it's Rim from the Sci-Fi Movie Podcast.
Hey, buddy.
In beautiful Victoria, British Columbia.
How are you doing, guys? Good. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, I got a question regarding Amazon. Dave, I know you're just an absolute expert with Amazon.
I played that game for a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have on our website, on the scifimoviepodcast.com website, we have affiliate links so people can go to the website and they can use our affiliate link to buy movies. But I'm curious to know how I get hold of that link that I would be able to give people if they want to go shop at Amazon. Is there a specific link that I could say, you know, here's the link for our particular affiliates, and then just give it to somebody? Would I be able to give somebody a link, and would I be able to find that link somewhere?
Here's the trick. Well, you go into your Amazon. Yeah, it's a new program. your Amazon account, and you basically, he said, seeing if I can get to a point where I can share my screen without giving away everything. There's a really cool, he said, now going back to Google so I can share my screen so I can show you guys what I'm doing. Share my screen. That would be this one. There we go. So hopefully, yes, you guys now see, I think, my Amazon account, right? New bounty program. No, you're seeing Mixlr. Hold on. Let's try that
again. We're seeing Colin Studio.
Yeah, that's, so there you go. There's the back end of Colin Studio.
Hey, that looks good. That looks simple.
Let me quit that now. Because what you'll do is, where is my Amazon screen? United, screen one, screen two. Oh, here we go.
I was thinking that there might be some place right in the Amazon affiliates page where you have links and banners. And
yeah, when you go in, you should be able to see my Amazon account now. And you can see I've have two items ordered so far this month, which is weird because two clicks. So I'm not burning up the thing there, but it
can't see that, Dave, for whatever reason. It's not showing up.
It's not showing
on
up
the video.
See that. That's really weird.
It's a weird morning. Things just aren't, well, maybe you can just explain it.
Yeah. When you go into your Amazon account, there's an option at the top for links and banners. Where you can
I'm there right now. Actually.
Yeah, you can either go there and type in a product. So if I was looking for, let's say, Star Wars episode, what episode should we go with, Rem?
Episode 7.
7, okay.
It won't be out yet.
All right, well, let's not do that then. Let's go 6.
Go with 6.
Okay, so here I can see Return of the Jedi widescreen. Over on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see where it says Get Link. And when you click on that, you then have an option for text only. And what I do sometimes, if I just want the link, is on the right-hand side of your screen, it'll give you a preview. And if you just right-click on that preview link and choose Copy Link Address, that's the same as highlighting it and choosing Copy. Then you have an option.
Right.
Then you have an option for Image Only, where you can see, do you want a large image or a small image? And then you have a widget, which puts this little, like, 300 by 250 kind of, widget, for lack of a better phrase, a little box that will show up on your website.
Yeah. Right. Now, that's what we typically do, like, on our website on the right-hand side. I go grab that code.
Right.
But what I'm looking for is more of a generic link. So I could see the people at the office, and people at the office are ordering stuff from Amazon all the time. And I would love to be able, to say to people, hey, just go to our affiliate link. It's blah, 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 blah. And here's one link that would essentially be something that they could use to get to Amazon and then shop for whatever they want. Yep. I'm not even sure if this actually exists.
Well, what most of the big boys do, the Jay Moores, I'm trying to think of other kind of somewhat celebrity people do, is they say, go to my website and click on the Amazon link. And they have just a generic banner at the top. And the reason for that, and this is one of those really gray areas in the Amazon terms of service, is if you have a link that you send people to Amazon and it's not disclosed that this is an Amazon link, technically you're breaking your terms of service. So that's why even if you do something like go to mywebsite.com/Amazon, it's, and that's where I tried to get them to like be specific on this. And you, I just couldn't get somebody to say, yes, that's good, or yes, that's bad. Cause there are some pretty weird terms that aren't exactly 100% clear.
Dave, I think a bunch of us are using that though, right now with the slash Amazon. And no, I haven't, you know, that's what I use. That's theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. I know Daniel does that too. And I think that's okay. I mean, we're all using it. We haven't been shut down. I think that's the term, you know, the one they didn't like was when you put it inside the URL. So if you make Amazon.theaverageguy.tv, that will absolutely, that's against their terms. But I think as long as it's not in the domain, that's what they're concerned about. They don't want it in that domain section. So as long as it's your domain slash Amazon, and you make that link with a pretty link or whatever a URL shortener that you are using for your site, pretty link is the easiest way, I think, to get it done.
Yeah.
And that seems to work real well. And then you can just share that your domain slash Amazon.
Right. So in that case, you would go out to, there's actually a spot where you can link to any page. Because even it's kind of weird that they don't have a built-in affiliate link to their homepage. They have a bunch of product page and banner links, but you think there'd be like one that's like, hey, use this to send people to the homepage. So I've actually gone in. Actually, there's one right there, homepage link 2014. It's like, they've changed that apparently. So if I click on that.
Is that somewhere right on the Amazon page itself?
It's actually in the Amazon affiliate thing, but here's the part that drives me crazy is when you go to that, here are at least 9 different images to send people to Amazon, but there's no text link. So you have to then either,
you can strip one out, make your own.
Yeah, you strip one out of the, you know, you'll see it, and it's incredibly ugly. The link to Amazon.
They are ugly. You are ugly.
And you basically look for the end of the quotation marks. That's where it starts with HTTP, and when you see the next quotation mark, that's the end of it. Because mine says it's for a button that's 180 by 150. You don't want all that stuff. You just want, in my case, and it's I would say it to you, but it's literally in the box. It's 3 lines long. It's just the link. So that's where you can take that link, and you can put that into Pretty Link and go that route.
There, and Amazon does have a link checker. So that you can use, you know, if you go to the banner area, there's a link checker. And if you ever have any questions about creating a link and you want to make sure you're getting credit for it, you can throw it in that link checker and it'll come back and say, yes, this works, or no, this doesn't.
Okay. So you're saying it's best to use the selection where it says link to any page and then create a link that way?
If you want a text link, that would work. I've done that in the past. Rather than trying to strip,
that's fairly easy.
Yeah, rather than trying to strip one out of the homepage link that is then designed for a graphic. In theory,
I'd like to put a graphic.
Oh, there's a if you want a graphic, then there's one right there. If you go when you first log in, you'll see under, I think it's links and banners. If I click on product links, nope, not product links. If I go to banner links. So under links and banners, it will say banner links. And yeah, you'll see right there, rotating banner campaigns by category. And there's an option there that says homepage link 2014. And that if you go in there, there's a ton of options there.
Excellent. Okay, I'll start digging around this today. I'm sure I'll be able to find something.
There you go. How's everything going with your podcast, man?
Homepage. Doing really well, really well. We just passed our 50th episode mark. And we're really good. We've just crossed the threshold of 4,000 downloads a month. So that's it's a bit of a small milestone for us, but we're pretty proud of that.
That's cool.
And getting lots of guests. I'm really digging that. You know, to date we've had probably 10, 15 different people on the podcast, and having a lot of fun. It's so much fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing everybody at Podcast Movement in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that'll be here's what I did this week. This is funny. I was teaching a PowerPoint class, and I said, we're all just going to do our own, rather than do the examples in the book, let's all make our own examples. Let's make something that's personal to us. And then I worked on my presentation for Podcast Movement as the instructor. So, killing two birds with one stone there.
Teacher's tricks, huh?
Yeah, that was it. And
Well done, well done. Yeah, so we'll look forward to seeing you at in Dallas. Are you going too, Jim?
I am not going, no. My schedule just didn't allow for it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
It's weird. Your audio is almost better.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're just slightly underwater now.
I'm swimming to the surface.
Excellent.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate the help, and we will talk to you later on.
All right.
Thanks for calling in.
There you go.
My pleasure. Take care. Thanks for your help.
It's just that easy. You pick up the phone, you dial 845-262-2401. You pop up on the screen, I click a button, and your smiling voice will be on there. And, of course, that was Remy from Sci-Fi Movie Podcast. We forgot to have him.
Daniel wanted me to mention the affiliate link ID piece that's buried inside your, you know, that as we talk about Amazon, you want to make sure there are some code in there. When you log into Amazon, you're going to get your username on Amazon, whatever that is, when you sign up for an affiliate relationship. Then there's going to be a minus 20. It'll be negative 20, however you want to say that.
Right.
That is technically the ID that you have. So you want to make sure that's in the link that, you know, each time. Although, that being said, if you send someone over to your Amazon page using that link and they search for something else, that affiliate link will go away and you'll think, oh, I've lost the sale. Not true. We had one of our listeners this week verify that with Amazon, actually emailed into their tech support, very concerned that what he was buying was not getting credited to our account. And they assured him, nope, if you come in on that, there's a cookie embedded there that keeps that sale associated with it, even though that link will disappear when you go to it, that affiliate will get credit for it. So don't feel like if that goes away, you're going to be missing out.
I have a tip for people, and wait a minute. I think, here we go.
Oh, hey, Dave, you're focused just on me, too.
That's right. It's time for a pet peeve, and I just did my own.
You focused on me, didn't you?
I did. Wait a minute. Here we can do this one.
Dave pops a cork in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Yeah. People that record live podcasts that forget to sign out of Facebook, and through the entire podcast, you keep hearing, bet-em, bet-em, bet-em. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, we're talking away, and all of a sudden I hear, I forgot to sign out of Facebook.
Yeah, because
there's a podcast I was listening to the other day, and they had Facebook and whatever the Google notifier is for desktop that lets you know when you have mail. And I was like, again, it wasn't like I didn't unsubscribe, but I was like, you know, that's a pretty easy fix to make. And it was just kind of, it was a squirrel in the middle of your content. All of a sudden I hear Bennett and something else. And I was like, you know, that's pretty easy to shut those down.
Yeah, so. They're also on the YouTube video. They're saying I'm staying in focus. So I don't know if you've got me clicked, which means I'm always on the big screen. But are we flipping back and forth on that?
If I talk now, we are definitely not flipping.
Okay, good. That was a ways back. I just wanted to make sure that.
Yeah, because you weren't clicked, but we are definitely not flipping because I don't see me now.
You just see
so
me?
So look sexy, man. Okay.
Wow. Podcast and sexy.
It must be it's just gremlins in the machine today.
It is kind of a weird morning with that. You know, you just have, you know, sometimes when you're doing it, you just have things like that and you just push forward. You get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I can manually switch it to me, but I just see you at this point. When I talk, in theory. Well, here again, what's weird is there's no lights blinking on the Google Plus Hangout. There's something freaky going on here. Because normally I have little, you know, progress lights. And so I'll just manually switch it to me. That's kind of weird. But yeah, normally, remember I said this morning when I had to switch my audio thing, it was kind of weird. And I'm like, no, it's me, because normally I kind of try to gauge my volume, although those are completely worthless, at least to know if I'm doing something. So very odd. And this would be my question. If I were to leave the Google Hangout, it's all over, right? Because I started it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't want to do that.
So behind the scenes, Google has been releasing or has been working on, Google has been releasing the ability to not have to have the plugin. It's built into the browser now. So, you know, if you had guests and you'd have to have them sign in and then have to add the plugin. If they don't use Google Plus, they'd have to add the plugin. And it was kind of, your guests had to jump some hoops. if you were going to use Google Plus to get this done. Well, they're trying to take that out inside the Chrome browser, and so there's been some new releases of Chrome that don't require the plugin. I think that's messing things up. So it may, you know, your results may vary as you use it. I use it at work all the time. I didn't have any problems this week, but we've had some problems today. And you just never know. They're constantly upgrading the service. Again, that's why you just got to get through it, right? You just do it, you work it, you make it happen. The content's what's important. I mean, yeah, we've got some audio problems and some other stuff, but at the end of the day, it's all about content.
Well, and the other thing is that we just, rather than try to pretend it wasn't happening, yeah, we just said, hey, guess what? We're having audio problems today.
Yeah. Well, it's, you got to go full disclosure when you're a podcaster, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you're podcasting to podcasters, right? Because that's the thing I see when I do podcast consulting for folks, and those first couple ones, especially, I just trained a backup at work. So now I have a second producer at work to do help me do some of the podcasting stuff. And as I was training him, he would come up against problems and he would just freak out, right? And I'd be like, hey, whoa, slow down there. Just think it through.
Yeah.
You know, and so when I was on vacation, he was doing it when I was on vacation, and I got two emails immediately before he got started. I can't do this. I can't do that. And then, so I just let him sit for a minute, and 2 minutes later I got, oh, never mind. I figured it out. So, you know, you just, it's like, stay calm, make it through. It'll be fine. Think it out. Don't freak out. You know, whatever you start doing, don't just start changing settings rapidly and wildly, because you're going to screw stuff up. You may not ever be able to unwind. So just think it through. And at the worst case, cancel it and redo it when your stuff is better, you know?
Ryan says, stay calm and podcast. He actually has a question. I'll go ahead and answer this. It says, Dave, I'm looking for a good workflow to repurpose audio content. When you bring in audio to your podcast and then pause for commentary, how am I doing that? Two ways. One, both have their pros and cons. I use Soundbite many times on the iPad for that. And I will, now that's the good news. The bad news is the only way to get things into Soundbite, and there might be another way that I need to look into, but for the most part, you got to plug in a cable. Oh, it's so hard. I have to plug in a cable. I have to fire up iTunes, and then I have to drag the file into the app section of iTunes. It's not the easiest thing in the world. Now, the cool thing is with Soundbite, you can go in and just hit a pause button and then play, pause, and you basically pause and unpause. So that's the good news. It's a little easier to pause and unpause. And again, we're talking like two extra clicks here. That's when I say it's harder. The other way is I love Boss Jock Studio, but to pause and unpause, you have to go in. And the cool thing is you can drag things into Boss Jock via Dropbox. So I just throw any files for the episode into Dropbox. I open up my Boss Jock and say, I want to assign a sound file to this button. It's super easy. But later, if I want to pause and unpause, I don't just hit the button. I have to go into the button and see like the Big Shot Smarty Pants kind of options. Cause you can go in and say, I want the clip to start at 5 seconds. So you can do some really cool stuff, but also that's where you have to go to pause and unpause. So it's not a huge deal. You just have to kind of really pay attention. And yeah, so Boss Jock is easier to get files onto. It's just, you have to really kind of pay attention when you're getting ready to play a file to not just hit the button, because that's your default knee-jerk reaction, is to go in and see like these extra settings for the file so I can pause and unpause. And Daniel in the chat room says, Soundboard by Ambrosia. Interesting. I think it's the one Adam Curry uses for the No Agenda show, which I believe Ambrosia is a Mac program, if I remember right.
Dave, so, John Harns actually asked a while back too. He's got 5 podcasts in the can. He's releasing it. You know, he's doing a new, new show. Better to release them all at once, one per day for a week, one a week if it's a weekly show. What's your recommendations on that?
Well, here's the thing. I think Ryan just did this. I have a client of mine who, unfortunately, she does a daily radio show out of New York, the Debbie Nigro show, and her engineer will get behind giving me the files to then podify them, for lack of a better phrase. And so all of a sudden we'll put up like 3 days in a row. And what happens is the last one that goes up will get a lot of hits, and then the following two won't. And then, so I'm not sure all at once is a good idea, because you're really assuming whatever it is, the last one you upload better be the killer one, because that's what's going to motivate people to want to hear episode 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. And the other thing you have to be, I don't know if it's cautious about, but something to think about, if, let's see, if you listen to the first episode and you don't listen to the next, there's that whole weird thing in iTunes where if you don't listen to stuff, it stops downloading your latest content.
After a while, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, after a couple weeks or 3 weeks or a month or something.
So I'm thinking if I'm going to do a bunch, I would do daily. That way, at least when people, you know, when it checks your feed, there'll be something to download where unless they have it set to download all or download 2, you know, if you upload 5 and it only downloads the last 2, then you're just missing the last 3 unless they go to the feed. And I'm thinking in podcasts app, the Apple thing. Your thoughts on that, Jim?
Yeah, I think if it's a weekly show and you've got 5 in the can, I think you start with 1 and you've got, and if it's evergreen content, now you are set for a disaster. And so if you get behind a week, hey, not a big deal. You've got 5 in the can. And so you can kind of click that down one and click it down one. That's I for me, that would be an ideal weekly podcaster situation, is to release one, wait a week, and then you've always got 3 or 4 built up. It gives you tons of options. It's just like cash. You know, in life, the more cash you have, the more options you have. When podcasting, the more podcasts you have in the can, the more options you have with your feed. And if you need to speed one up or move them around, or an event happens that where one you've got in the can would really fit well, you can move those around and you're not beholden to the weekly schedule. So if that's weekly, if you're thinking daily, 5 is not near enough to have in the can. So you know, you'll have to work on that. But I think he's thinking weekly here. I would, I just start one a week and get them going.
And Ryan says, for those 4 shows that he uploaded all at once, the stats now have evened themselves out. And
yeah, I think they do eventually.
And and Daniel's saying the last 5 episodes, if you don't listen to them, if you don't play them, iTunes and the podcasts app will pause the subscription. So, but in theory, if you find the show, you're going to listen to at least one of those if you uploaded 5. So,
Daniel's on the line.
He's on the line. That is him on the line. There you go. Speak of the devil from the Audacity to podcast and noodle.mx. Daniel J. Lewis, thanks for calling in, buddy.
Hey, Dave and Jim, how's it going?
Good, man. Good Saturday morning to you.
I wanted to know from you guys what you think of the possibility, and well, it really looks like it's confirmed now, but of Apple buying Swell and what that might mean for podcasters. I wanted to get your opinion on that too.
Well, the interesting thing is they bought it and closed it down from what I read. And I was like, well, that's kind of stinky, unless they're then going, I don't know what to think of it. I thought about that. I'm glad you asked that. Cause I'm like, well, on one hand, cool. That means they're either A, because was Swell making that much of a dent in the podcast world? Because
no.
Yeah, because I'm like going, it's not like they bought them because they were competition. I think that, so I'm assuming they bought them for their technology, you know, their discoverability kind of engine. So I'm kind of excited about that. I hope they take that and put it into the podcast app. And Jim, what are your thoughts?
Typically, that never goes well when companies buy other companies for their technology. It's so hard. The integration pieces are so hard. I mean, some work, some make it work and it goes well. But for a lot of the bigger companies like Apple or Microsoft or Google, as they've acquired these, it takes them a year or 2 or 3 for them to really integrate. I mean, you have some successes like Waze. When Google bought Waze and integrated it, it's still not fully integrated into Maps. And I mean, it's just, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, I hope to see it resurface because I used Swell for, I don't know, a week and played with it. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And I submitted my podcast to Swell. What are your thoughts on it, buddy?
Well, I was thinking the same thing too, that they're going to merge the technology in, but, I was thinking maybe it will even apply to more than just the podcast app, because Apple's whole recommendation engine is pretty horrible. It's basically just people who buy this also bought this, or people who listen to this also bought that, which can be horrible. Like if my Clean Comedy podcast is recommended right next to Mark Maron's podcast,
yeah,
with very distinct initials, So I'm hoping they incorporate the better recommendations. But since you actually used Swell, did you like the recommendation engine? Did you use it to find new shows?
Actually, my initial reaction to Swell was meh. It was like, all right, it wasn't like, wow, this is cool and it's easy. It was just kind of like, and at the time, I think I was still playing with Stitcher. So I didn't really feel like finding all my shows and really using it exclusively. And so it didn't like really knock my socks off when I played with it. I was kind of like, all right, I see what it does. And at the time, I mean, this was like when it first came out. So I don't know if there were a ton of podcasts in there. I kind of did a couple quick searches and it was like, okay. So For me, I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't blown away by the technology, but I can't really remember if, I think I it suggested some things and I thought, I listened to it and I'm like, yeah, that wasn't, it wasn't like I was like, oh, thanks for suggesting that. It was like, yeah, okay. So.
Hey, Daniel, let me ask you a question. Do you think, what do you think the percentages, and there's no stats on this, so this is your opinion, but what do you think the percentages of people who really search for and find podcasts in a search app like that, and then it sticks? You think that's high or low versus like word of mouth or recommendations?
I think it's much more word of mouth. The recommendations, what someone hears recommended from a podcast or from a friend. And others have said this too, like Rob Walch keeps hitting on this, that discoverability is not a problem for the consumer. It's accessibility, making it easy for them to use. And that's why an app like Swell still has that big barrier to entry that people have to know to look for that app and install it before they even get to their podcast. So I don't know really what people out there are completely doing, but from what I see, most people know the podcast that they're looking for, unless they're just getting into it and curious.
Yeah, we spend so much thought, effort, and time on new and noteworthy. And those kinds of, and getting, you know, searches and being in all the directories and all that stuff. And I really wonder what the ROI is on that for the amount of time we spend doing it versus encouraging our listeners to share, you know, share the podcast with somebody else. I do some podcast consulting for a group, and they, in the very first part of their podcast say ideas are worth sharing. If you've liked this or, you know, if you've liked this, please share it. Just that suggestion to do word of mouth as opposed to trying to be on every single search engine, you know, known to man.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, on topical content will always show up better to search engines. So like if, for example, I have a podcast about the TV show Once Upon a Time. So when someone searches iTunes for Once Upon a Time, maybe they're familiar with TV show fan podcasts, or they're just searching for the TV show, they'll also find my podcast because it is extremely topical. It's focused on that niche. But some of the more general stuff out there, it'll be harder for people, I think, to be discovered in that way.
Well, and you bring up a different point, topical search versus recommendations coming out of, you know, something like Swell. Those are two totally different ideas. And so if you're working on the topical, you have a great chance with SEO to be picked up. I think these recommendation engines, even on Stitcher, they're just not very good. And I don't know if I try and game them or spend much time thinking about it.
I think the only thing that it did for me on Stitcher was I didn't realize there's a comedian named Artie Lang who used to be on the Howard Stern show until he tried to kill himself, basically. And I thought he'd just fallen off the planet. I knew he was back in rehab and was getting his life back together. He was going back and he was doing comedy. But I had no idea he had a podcast, and I happened to be on Stitcher, and it was like the Artie Lang show, and I'm like, I didn't know he had a podcast. So that was one. But then again, it was, you know, here's somebody who's already famous, so I already knew what it was. But if that had said, you know, whatever, the marketing and margarita show, I'd be like, well, okay. But I knew that name, so that's probably why I clicked on that more than that. But it did actually discover something for me, but yeah. Interesting.
Okay. I was just curious on your thoughts there.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for calling in, Daniel.
Thanks, man. And again, you could find him over at the Audacity to Podcast. That was an interesting...
That's a little trumpet. Hey, yeah. Randy Cantrell's out there, and Randy asked this question. He said, do you find that Google Hangouts messes with your audio? He just dropped below the fold there. Do you guys find that Google Hangouts behave wonky with your audio interface?
They did today when we first... And it's still... doing wonky stuff today because that's why I have to manually keep switching this back and forth. So there's Jim, There's Dave.
Oh yeah, that's just the video. That's not even the audio.
Yeah.
No, in voice mode, they will absolutely take control of your audio interface and adjust the volume how they see fit. So you lose control of your volume. You know, it's trying to do it for the average person who may not have great equipment and so move it around. If you put it in studio mode, it will lock that in. So we're both in studio mode right now, and that seemed to help.
Yeah. And what ended up fixing the problem this morning, because Jim could not hear a thing coming from me, and I'm like, I didn't really change anything. And all I did is I go through a Griffin iMic, and I unplugged it and plugged it back in. And then I switched, because that is set to my default audio input and output. And so I went into my Google Hangout and said, hey, use the default, which is weird because it was pointing at the iMic. Like I said, specifically, use the iMic. And I switched from that to say, use my default, which of course points at the iMic, and that worked. So it's just one of those things. People always ask me, Dave, you're a computer instructor. Don't you get tired teaching, you know, Excel 1? And I'm like, no, because I deal with computers and it's never the same class. There's always something going on.
Well, with everything changing all the time too, there's always new updates and things to troubleshoot. So it's never gets old.
Yeah.
It gets frustrating, but it never gets old.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, today we just said, well, we'll deal with it. And we hit record and it started going, and we saw where there were people in the chat room, and we're like, I can understand what you're saying. You sound like you're underwater a little bit, but.
Well, today would have been a good day for a double ender. And I started to fire that up and realized they did not have Audacity configured correctly for this PC to be able to pull in just my audio on it. But that would have been a good, call is to do a double ender that I record on my side. And so then I could have sent you that file at the end of the podcast to say, okay, Dave, merge this in. And, you could have brought, well, that would have been a challenge for you, 'cause you're probably not recording just your side, right? You're recording the whole
thing. I'm recording everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. So that may not have worked either, but that's a good emergency. You know, if you're in a situation where you get enough, maybe you're in Google Plus and the bandwidth's not good enough to get really good video. So bring that video quality down to almost nothing and get good audio, and then record a double ender. And at least that will give you good audio quality.
That is one thing we haven't tested. I'm already down one notch. I'm going to go down to low. I now have low. Well, it's not going to let me do that in the middle of a hangout.
You totally blacked you out when you did that.
Yeah. It's like, no, not going to happen. Yeah.
You know, for this podcast, Skype, when we think about the way we do this, because we don't bring guests in via video. So this might be one of those things where although Skype doesn't have a great way of recording live like we're doing on Google Plus, although I've done that before with a bunch of trickery. You can get it done. But, you know, the video side by side, in other words, where you and I are not flipping all the time, but where our two screens would be side by side, that wouldn't be a bad option. Then you wouldn't have to manually click.
That's interesting. John Parker says the audio is only bad on Mixler. So on the Hangout, your audio is fine. As everyone together, what does this mean? Yeah, so
it's just quiet on Mixler. Well, it could depend on how you're feeding it in, and I mean, you've got a jumble of wires to make this work. So
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, when in doubt, reboot. And I should just do that every Saturday morning when I get in. I don't know about you. It takes me forever to reboot by all the time.
Then, I've gotten my reboots down. You solid state on everything. That is, you know, right now, solid state hard drive, going back to the storage discussion, solid state hard drives are just ridiculously cheap. You're paying 50 cents a gig, I think, about at this point. So 120 gig SSD is about what you need for your OS anymore. That's about the minimum I would go with if you're using a Windows device. A lot of the newer Mac devices already have SSDs, so you're already set. But that will change. An SSD will change your boot from 30 to 35 to 40 seconds on Windows to about 10 seconds. And it'll also increase your performance. Yeah, that's the best way to revive an old. If you're a podcaster and you got some old equipment, the best way to revive it is just put a solid state drive in it. Oftentimes you'll see a 5 to 10 times increase in performance just by a 100, by a $60 or $70 or $80 SSD upgrade. And so it's not terribly expensive. You'll get great performance and you'll extend the life oftentimes of a laptop or even a desktop. You can extend the life just by putting an SSD drive in there.
We have a question from Randy again. It says, is there some reason why we don't use the Q&A in a Hangout. I think I tried it once on something, and I just know our problem is we started out originally on Spreaker, which we still are. All we use that for is the iHeartRadio option. We liked Mixlr, which is who we're streaming the audio through. We liked their chat window better than Spreaker. And then Dave got in his head, hey, let's try video and let's add a call in. And the fun thing is every time you add something new, it adds a new level of complexity to it. And Jim, have you ever used the Q&A part of
having? Yeah, when they first came out, we tried them. I prefer a chat room for my questions, and I prefer not to have to look at three or four different places to get questions. That's the just I'm trying to, you know, consolidate them down. We have a chat room on our we use Chatwing for our chat service, and so I try to drive everybody to that. And what I found is when I had Q&A on, I just quit looking at it. And then, of course, that makes people mad when you don't answer their, you know, they put the question in Q&A and you don't answer it.
I guess that's my question. Where does it show up? Does it show up in the video?
No, it shows up in the Hangouts here for us. I haven't used the newest version in a while, so I'm not sure. So you get a little Q&A section on the right-hand side of the video window that we're looking at. There would be a Q&A there. But again, I'd minimize it or whatever. And it did not work. I'm not saying it doesn't work. It just didn't work in my workflow very well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't use it. It's a great tool. If you're a podcaster, you should try it. You should test it. It might be something that fits you very well and your audience might like to use it. It is a great way, especially if you have a lot of viewers coming in off of YouTube or Google Plus who are not on your page. It's a great way to get questions in. So, you know, it's very obvious to them when they're watching that Q&A is turned on. And so they could we had a guy come in earlier, Zid. And yeah. He was asking a question. First, he asked it on our Google Plus page. Then he came over and joined the group. And then when we gave him the phone number, he's like, well, I'm in Iraq and I can't call in. And you could have just left that in the chat. So, yeah. you know, there's several ways to do that. But there are different places to for folks. I always say try and make it as easy as for your listener as possible. So know your audience. If you find a way that works, stick to it. If you've got to support multiple ways, then support them. But it all depends on where your audience is.
Yeah, and Daniel says you have to basically follow a specific Google workflow if you're using Q&A. And Randy's saying he's new to the live version. I say, hey, for the record, there's no rule that says you have to do live. It does add more bells and whistles to play with. You know, if you could see what goes on when I start the show, that's why now there's like pre-show, because I used to try to hit record, start the Hangout, hit play, adjust the volume, and we're like, no, forget it. So now if you get here about 10:25, you usually hear us chatting beforehand, and then we just start the show at 10:30, because it was just ridiculous. And I would always forget something, and it was like, you know what, I'm not part octopus. And yeah, so yeah, I just go back and fix it later. So
we do the same thing on our live shows. I actually start about 15 minutes early and allow for some open chat between the chat room and us to kind of get them all lubed up and warmed up and, you know, get that going. That's why TV shows have, you know, that's why talk shows and or late night shows have a warm up comedian, right?
Sure.
Get the audience kind of warmed up. We do the same thing, and it's just you don't have to. If you're going to edit post production, you don't have to be perfect to start with. So
absolutely.
You got some time. Hey, there were some questions in chat real quick about the SSD comment that I made. There were a lot of folks saying the quality, you know, the older SSDs, especially a couple years ago, had some very limited write capabilities. And with the advent of cheaper SSDs and more of them getting into the system and Apple using them standard, there's been a lot of pressure on those industries to make them better. And so the technology has gotten better. I won't nerd you out with all the, you know, with all the things that are there. Let me just say, like with any technology, it's gotten better. And so SSDs for most people will last as long or longer than a spinning hard drive. I mean, we all know the quality of spinning hard drives these days isn't that great either. And so you should expect a 2 to 3 year life out of any hard drive that you buy. You should always, going all the way back to the beginning, you should always make sure everything is backed up anyways. I've had hard drives fail that are days old. I've had hard drives never fail that are years old. I think I've got some drives in my Drobo right now that are maybe 6 years old, 7 years old. They just keep spinning. And so you don't know, so you got to get that stuff backed up. But absolutely right now, if you haven't tried an SSD, right now is the time to jump in. Prices are great. Very cost effective, and a great way to increase your performance.
There you go. Hey, we've got a little bit of time left, If you've got a question, as always, the number is 845-262-2401. And we have open phone lines at the moment, and I'll do my traditional plug since you're listening. If you'd like to join the School of Podcasting, use the coupon code S20 to save $20 off your first month. But we've got a little bit of time left. But
let me say one more thing on SSDs, Dave. Sorry,
sure.
just to, not to dominate there, but with SSD drives, writing is what ends their life so much. The reading is okay, reading is great, writing is what's hard on them. So if you set up your SSD as your OS, there's not a lot of writing that goes on for an OS drive. I mean, it's just basically reading those files and doing some stuff. And then you pair that with a spinning drive for your data. So the data goes on your spinning drive, the OS stays on the OS. That is the optimal situation when you're talking about a computer and what it's doing, because your spinning drives are great at writing and reading both, and OS or SSD drives are great at fast at reading, and they're fast at writing too, but it does shorten their life some. So that dual combo on a PC, SSD for OS, spinning drive for your data, is a great, and a lot of the tech guys I hang out with, that's kind of the configuration they use. So that's, somebody talked about limited life cycles out there. That primarily is with the writing. So you just want to limit the amount of writing that you do to that drive. So I got a little nerdy. Sorry about that.
That's all right. We did have another question about affiliate stuff, and Amazon in the chat room says, did I say at one time you should not use PrettyLink? No, use PrettyLink. Be careful. There's a setting in PrettyLink that lets you use an iframe, and that will flat out put you in the out of bounds mode. As I found out the hard way. Yeah. And I'm going to dig through their terms of service. And I just remember them being very gray on whether a slash Amazon is okay. I know there are a lot of people doing that. And then Ken Blanchard, the one, the only black man with a gun, my brother from another mother, said, can a hangout be saved? It is if it's on air. But the only way I think you could save a Google Hangout would be if you're using something like ScreenFlow or Camtasia to record it while you're actually doing it.
Ustream would do that as well. You can, if you have a Ustream account, you could screen capture that, and Ustream would do both audio and video. So that's old school. We don't talk about Ustream very much. They changed their pricing terms and it got ugly over there. It's super expensive and they have mid-roll ads and all kinds of crazy stuff. But that is, well, as of a year or two ago, there was still a way to do it with Ustream.
There you go. More tools and fun stuff. Speaking of tools, there is I forgot to put this in our notes. In fact, I'm making it up as we speak. There's a new service coming out called liveaudiocast.co, and I'm not sure where they're based out of, but I was talking with the guy. His name is Lucas, and I said, here's what I'm looking for in a media host. I said, number one, don't mess with my file. He says, we're not really a podcast media hosting company. What they're trying to do is kind of like a Spreaker, give you an online tool so that you don't need a mixer, you don't need Audacity, you don't need a GarageBand. They'll actually, their software is going to do the rest. It says, if you don't need to worry about ID3 tags or any of the technical pieces, we're going to do that for you. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh, cool. Here's, again, I said, one of the things that's going to happen this year is we're going to have more and more services. It says our recording is done in WAVE and then encoded to MP3. We use 44.1 128 stereo. And I was like, okay. What else do they have here? For people that want more control over their technical aspects of podcasting, we are targeting people that want to remove the pain of the podcasting process, all the FTPing, the hosting, the website posting, XML. There are services right now that are charging over $2,000 a month for this. I'm like, who's charging $2,000 a month? But he says they do have unlimited bandwidth and hosting for all their accounts. He says we create a feed. So if you need an RSS feed, he says, but you can simply add your current existing feed in a program like FeedBurner. And I'm like, ugh. Or you can use the new feed as your new feed. He says it's pretty much however you drive the service. So really it's kind of a tool that's going to be online that's going to, they're going to try again to take the pain out of it. Says we do have some stats in our dashboard because I said that's the other thing I want. He says, but most of the analytics we leave to the big boys. Google Analytics and iTunes have this stuff figured out. We help our users if they need these to use up. And I said, basically, also, I want it to not be free, which people always like, what? Because I want it to be around. So it's just another hosting service that's kind of coming out, and they're going to try to be more than a host. They're going to be a place, like I said, to me, it sounds like Spreaker without the live streaming. It's a place where you can record wherever you're at. So I was just like, well, here we go. Here's another tool coming into the space. I've yet to play with it. I just that conversation started about 2 days ago, so I haven't had a chance to play with it. But at least it sounds like they're trying to meet most of my opinion when it comes to the things you look for in a media host. Stats, I think, are a big one. I forget the other company that just came out, and their stats are they tell you how many downloads your podcast got, but they don't tell you which episode. And I'm like, now come on, you got. I want to know which one's the most popular.
Yeah. Now, MediaFire, as we talked about earlier, they'd be immediately wiped out by your criteria because they don't do any stats for you, right? That's right.
That's a stat, right? Yeah. But it's like you said, I could go through Blueberry and get their stats.
Yeah, you could. You know, basically, they would be a hosting. It would work like any of those other services. They give you a .mp3 location and a .mp4 that you can put into your blog post, and it'll act just like any of the other ones as well.
Yeah, and technically they would get thrown out because they don't have unlimited bandwidth. Now, granted, they have 10 terabytes, which might as well be unlimited, but
yeah, 10 terabytes even with video will get you a lot. I think I'm gonna move my video. Actually, I don't offer video RSS at all. It's only YouTube at this point. And some of my listeners have been asking for video RSS, so I'm gonna try it out on them and see how that goes. They kind of challenged me. They're like, "Bring it on! Let's do it."
Bring it!
Well, the interesting thing for them was is in the interview when I was talking to him about him. As we kind of wrap it up here, is I was talking to him. It was this idea. He was like, "Jim, we're so file system focused," which means I have this .mp3, right, file. He goes, what if the end user doesn't care what that is? What if they just want to get and listen no matter where they're at, right? And so we're not downloading anything to anywhere. We're making it available to them no matter what their situation is. And so they're moving away. They're trying to get away from that. Here's a list of files, and they're trying to get to here's a list of content. And so they're moving that direction. And that's different for these storage options, right? All these storage providers are all very file system centric. They're all very, what are you doing with your file? And so they're trying to really get back to this media idea, and it's just media centric. How do I either watch it or listen to it or view it?
I love the fact that we get a ton of questions at like 2 till.
I know. It's the lightning round. You need a lightning round.
That's it.
5 minutes till. Here's the lightning round.
Well, Daniel again from the Audacity to Podcast. Yes, tell him what he's won. It's a cheese straightener. Yes, it is. Audiometric.io is the company I was talking about that gives you, this is the company that will pay you. We will pay you to host your files with us because they want to sell advertising against your content. And audiometric.io. And when I go in to look at my stats, because I test everything, it just says, hey, the more podcast money. Podcast got 9 downloads. I'm like, well, which episode? Oh, that you have to figure that out on your own, I guess. Ray Ortega from podcasterstudio.com and also the Podcasters Roundtable, which I believe we're having a Podcasters Roundtable Monday at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time, I believe is when that's going to kick off. So check your, go over to podcastersroundtable.com and sign up to be notified. And, what is that? Library Rock Records asked my thoughts about Auphonic. I love Auphonic. I bought the desktop app. That's how much I love it. It's a great way to remove noise, level out stuff. The only thing the desktop version doesn't do, A, it doesn't charge you a monthly fee, and B, it doesn't do the automatic uploads to Libsyn and Dropbox and all the other stuff. But I love it. I pretty much every episode of Ask the Podcast Coach has gone through Auphonic because I have callers, I have myself and Jim, and I do my best to get our audio somewhat in the ballpark. But 7:30 is Podcasters Roundtable. So Auphonic, I think, is a great tool. I like it a little better than Levelator. Now Levelator is free. Levelator is no longer being developed. It's kind of what you get is what you get. But Jim, have you played with Alphonic?
I have not. No. Nope. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It goes through and removes noise. You can do a whole bunch of stuff to it. And then if you use the online version, it's really cool. You can actually, if you wanted to, you could, much like the other one we're talking about, the live cast, whatever it was, you can upload your intro and outro, record your meat and potatoes on your phone if you wanted to, upload it, and it will stitch the file together, add your album art and your ID3 tag. So that's another one that live, whatever it was, I'd have to go back and look at my email. Where to go? liveaudiocast.co. That's another one that is kind of like an Alphonic without the noise reduction, where it'll stitch the whole thing together. I'm looking for somebody to come up with a system that allows me to stitch in advertising of my own. We had it at one point and it went away because it was kind of before its time, but that may be something that would be a system I would love to see in the future. I wish Libsyn would find a solution for the average podcaster, because they have that tool. It's just made for like the ESPNs of the world and things of that nature. So, awesome. I think I think it's good. All right, cool. So I want to thank everybody for showing up as always. This was an interesting episode. I can't wait to troubleshoot what the heck's going on, but it is what it is. And
always good to be with you on a Saturday morning, Dave.
It is. It's always fun to hang out. Really full chat room today. Did you notice that? Was that a little fuller than usual?
Yeah, no, a little fuller and some new folks. So good to see. I mean, Daniel, I think that's the first time we've seen Daniel out on a Saturday morning. So Daniel, Randy Cantrell came out this morning to be a part of it. And you start naming people, and I know I'm going to miss people, so I apologize. But those are the folks that I know coming in. And so we appreciate you coming out on a Saturday morning and being a part of the program.
And Jim, you can always find you at?
TheAverageGuy.tv.
And you can find me over at schoolofpodcasting.com, where Monday I'll be playing an interview with Ben Kruger, better known as the podcast marketing guy. And in Podtertainment Magazine, I might make an episode out of this. I'm going to compare podcasting to golf, because in reality, in golf, you're really just battling yourself. And in some ways, that's how it is with podcasting. You're battling your last episode.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll talk about that in the future. But thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again real soon with another episode of Ask the Podcast Coach.